Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio Studios right here in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight on the 17th of September. Happy Constitution Day, ladies and gentlemen, again, as we celebrate the most glorious legal document, I think, ever in the history of mankind. It's been damn durable since it was signed 233 years ago. So, again, happy Constitution Day to all the patriots out there who observe it and certainly appreciate what this document means so many years later. And, of course, I want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so, again, throughout Hudson County, throughout the Garden State, and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, and it's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, of course, at PoliticallyDirectNJ, and also check out my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, to say the very least. I know that a lot of you get a few laughs without question about what's going on right now in our political climate. And, of course, you know, getting a little laughs when it comes to, like, sports and memes and everything else. So if you enjoy my Instagram, like I many do, hopefully you'll continue following and certainly do let others know about that. And of course, you know, whether it's promoting my media platforms or programs or just anything else, philanthropy, Instagram definitely is a great platform. So you can definitely check it out there. Also hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, don't forget to go to the official page on Facebook and like it, of course. 1,000 likes and counting, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really happy to see that. My loyal listening audience certainly is devoted, and without question, again, I can't say enough about without you, the show wouldn't be possible, ladies and gentlemen. So, again, thanks for tuning in and certainly opining on the Facebook page about articles or about the podcast. So, definitely appreciate the love that I see there. Again, make sure you like it on Facebook as well, folks. 1,000 likes and counting. And, again, I want to hear from you tonight at some point, so don't be shy and call me toll-free, 812-8032. Once again, a toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of today's political scene, whether it's anything going on in the state of New Jersey or nationally, or even in any of the 21 counties here in New Jersey. Insider NJ does the best job anywhere in the Garden State to keep you up to date about what's going on. We have what I would argue the best columnist in the state. Starting at the top, our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, who from time to time kind of drives me crazy with some of his political views. But, I mean, I'm sure I drive him crazy, too. So I think it's like, you know, tit for tat, as they say. But we also have great columnists down the line. Of course, Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg, who really drives me crazy with some of his delusional columns on a weekly basis. But, hey, they get traffic. They might get a lot of hate and heat. But I think half the battle really for Alan is getting that heat that he gets online and some of the vitriol. So I think it helps traffic, and you know, why not? I think it's part of why I do what I do. So definitely check out Insider NJ, folks. Great columns, up-to-the-minute news at all times. Once you click on the website, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner the subscribe button. And once you're on there, just click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing with Insider NJ. So when you wake up in the morning, whether you're going for a run, whether, let's say, you're watching sports shows in the morning, like I like to watch Undisputed on Fox Sports, or maybe The Herd at noon, whatever, I'm sure you're scrolling through your inbox, right, on your phone, on your Mac, on your PC, on your tablet, whatever it is you're looking at, and your email's connected to it, guess what? The morning intelligence briefing will be right there waiting for you. So, again, check it out. Don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook, and, of course, follow it on Twitter. And as a reminder, don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the manager, the journalists, the staff, or our advertisers. So, folks, hope you had a wonderful week. Good to be back on live. I know the last few episodes have been pre-recorded. You know, sometimes it's really difficult because guests, I definitely want to come on the show, but sometimes doing the show live on Thursday nights isn't always possible. And that's a great flexibility about, you know, the internet, and certainly a great platform like Blog Talk Radio, able to pre-record the episode earlier in the day. And then, of course, once I submit it to my boss at Insider NJ, it goes on the website, and certainly it gets the traffic that it's getting. And, you know, for over 2 years now, you know, being able to say that I'm proud of, you know, being part of the Insider NJ family is something I take with a lot of responsibility. I take with a lot of pride as well because of the great job that Insider NJ does. I mean, I always agree with all of my colleagues and some of their columns, but being part of this team is something that, again, I'm very proud of, and I work very hard to keep up the great name of Insider NJ with whatever I'm doing, whether it's this program on a weekly basis, or my Hudson County podcast, or whether it's my Talking Politics show with Hudson Media Group and NJ On Air, or my show on Monday nights, Real Talk with Fernando Uribe via Eisen NJ. So obviously, you know who I am. You're going to be, you know, checking out what I have to say. And, you know, part of the mission here, folks, is to be able to, you know, get reputable guests on and be able to, you know, discuss things that are worthwhile in today's political climate. You know, again, we, you know, we're looking at like 46 days to go, you know, till election day, and there's a lot to talk about. But what's going on, not just in New Jersey, you know, whether or not the president has a chance to win New Jersey, which, again, has not gone red since 1988 under George H.W. Bush. It seems like a pretty tall task with a lot of the urban areas of the state, you know, Jersey City, Paterson, Newark, Elizabeth, Trenton, Camden, for example, are heavily populated Democratic strongholds. And, you know, the machines in those cities, again, I think have a pretty good monopoly over the electoral process. So, and while there are pockets of New Jersey that are conservative and tend to lean Republican, it's a tall order for the president, I think, to win on election day, win the 14 electoral votes here in New Jersey. Again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he wins the 14 electoral votes here, because I think there are a lot of people, maybe publicly, who won't say, but privately, are just tired of a lot of the woke nonsense, the social justice buffoonery that we're seeing on part of the left and a lot of the Democratic Party. Listen, I don't like to sort of paint with a broad brush, okay, because that's not something we do on the show. But what I can tell you unequivocally is there are a lot of New Jerseyans, folks, that are not happy with the state of the Democratic Party, and they're not happy with its nominee, much less his running mate. So, earlier tonight, right before I logged on to do the show tonight, I was watching the town hall on CNN with Joe Biden. And listen, to his credit, you know, he can only hold up for a few minutes, and that's great. And to his credit, too, because I'm surprised, because Anderson Cooper doesn't very rarely does his job. But asking tough questions today of the former vice president was sort of like, wow, oh my God, like Anderson Cooper is actually earning his paycheck today. You know, but then again, you know, a clock is right twice a day too. So nice to see CNN attempting to do its job, you know, once in a while. I guess they have to. I guess Jeff Zucker at some point forces his employees to actually engage in journalism. So it was refreshing to see that. But, you know, listen, folks, in less than 2 weeks, you know, the president faces off against Joe Biden in a debate in 90 minutes, no commercials, no interruptions. I don't like his chances. I think it might be something you might have to put the kids to bed early because it might be that graphic. But we'll see. But right now, there's a lot to sort of talk about as we have Election Day. And speaking of Election Day and speaking of what goes on in politics, you know, really, one of the people I enjoy talking to, I would like to have her on more so, but she's a very, very busy lady. She's one of those esteemed political and public affairs consultants that has developed quite a name for herself in the state of New Jersey. She's my good friend, the great Jeanette Hoffman, joining me tonight. I'm Politically Direct. How are you, Jeanette?
Hi, Professor. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to talk to a fellow member of Cowboys Nation. How are you?
How are we looking for Sunday? Are we going to get our first win? What do you think?
Well, listen, I thought after 10 years of Jason Garrett, we just got an overweight Jason Garrett this past Sunday. I thought we'd play calling. But, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on Mike, but it seemed like, Jesus, you know, like we just got rid of Jason Garrett. Now we got like Jason Garrett 2.0. But
2.0, exactly.
it's the life of being a Cowboy fan. We'll see if they bounce back. They should bounce back. Atlanta's a garbage team, but you never know. We tend to lose the games we should win, and we tend to win the games we tend to lose. So we'll see. But
exactly.
Jeanette, it's good to have you on here. Certainly, it's been a really tumultuous 2020. How are you and Josh and the family?
We are good. I mean, tumultuous is quite the word for it. We had my older two kids went back to school in person for the first time today. So that was exciting because we're on a hybrid schedule for the older two. But there was a delay in starting because some of the equipment come in time. So they got pushed back their in-person days. So it was like the first taste of normalcy since March. So that was kind of really nice. So it's crazy with four kids and working from home and half virtual, half in-person schooling. And the election is going to be fun to watch.
Sure.
What's going on in New Jersey is also crazy. I want to say this whole budget process with Governor Murphy, hold on to your wallets because tax hikes are coming. He just announced a millionaire's tax. And, you know, also in that, what people don't realize is, you know, this millionaire's tax will, you know, it's ultimately going to land on middle-class taxpayers because you're going to see these high wage earners are going to move out of state as they always do, because these people have the flexibility to do so. So when revenues fall short, who are they going to come after? It's always going to be on the middle class. So, you know, that's coming. But also, you know, what hasn't been talked about a lot is business owners are getting taxed. The corporate business tax is going to go up and going to be the highest taxed state in the nation for businesses. So that's not going to be great for our business climate. Businesses are already struggling in New Jersey. So it's very tough. And our restaurants still aren't open. That's something that's an industry that's really struggling here to get back on its feet. You're going to see a lot more restaurants closing in the months to come. So look, it's just, you said it best, it's a really tumultuous time politically, economically in New Jersey and around the country. I'm looking forward to the presidential debates as well. I don't think I'm going to let my little ones watch that. I think you said it best.
Yeah, no, and you covered a lot there, Jeanette. I definitely want to be able to dissect a lot of what you just listed for us here tonight in the program, because there really is a lot to cover. But first and foremost, you know, you brought up the budget, and I was talking with NJGOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt a couple of weeks ago here on the show. I had State Senator Michael Tesla on this program. I've had him on my Real Talk show. And it just seems, and this is something where, I'm not trying to be polarizing because I think people accuse me of being that too often, but I think it's what makes the show. But what's really upsetting, though, Jeanette, is as a taxpayer and homeowner, you know, it seems like the governor and the legislature is really tone deaf when it comes to, instead of looking at where they can trim some fat off the budget and spending in New Jersey. It just seems like, you know what, let's just tax, 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 and spend, spend, spend. It's like they're spending like drunken sailors. And again, no disrespect to sailors. They're admirable men and women in our armed forces. But my God, it just seems like, you know, and people get on me a lot, Jeanette, I'm not just on this program, but I'm sure my insider NJ bosses get a lot of grief from the emails and the hate that I get. But it just seems like, I'm not trying to be bombastic, but the thing is, though, that liberals in New Jersey, especially those in the legislature, or a lot of nonprofit advocacy groups or activists, they're just tone deaf. It's like you can't tax your way out of prosperity. Like, where were these people when they took Econ 101? For the love of God, like, Jesus Christ, like, wait a minute. Like, this just isn't possible. We're seeing, listen, we saw tolls go up on the parkway and the turnpike, respectively. Mm-hmm. We're going to see the gas tax go up on October 1st. It seems like, well, why don't you cut out some fat? Like, and I said this on the air recently to a couple of different guests. I said, listen, here are three suggestions. And maybe it might not be an enormous amount of money, Jeanette, but I want to get your thoughts on this. I would tell Governor Murphy right now, if I sat across the table, I would say, Governor, listen, number one, put a freeze for 1 year on the free community college. That'll save some, that'll save taxpayers something, okay? Number two, let's cut out, you know, at least let's put a freeze on the gas tax for another year. And the third one, I would argue, is let's trim down a lot of these departments, okay? I have people that I know that are in the Department of Human Services. I just saw last year a young lady's going to be a guest on my program soon. We're seeing the governor create, like, a division of new Americans in the Department of Health and Services. Like, these are like these wasteful government hires that, you know what, I think if you just trim some of that fat, it might go a long way in telling you and me and Josh and homeowners, like, we're serious about spending. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you just listed some great places where they could trim the fat. I mean, but the issue is that there is absolutely no appetite by Democrats in Trenton, particularly by the governor, to cut any spending. You know, since Governor Murphy took office, that budget has grown by $5 billion. In particular, this year, you know, look, we're all struggling in this economy since COVID, since the pandemic. Everyone has had to look at their household budgets and take inventory and see, you know, what they need to cut back on. But state government, for whatever reason, feels they don't need to do that. And instead, Governor Murphy has borrowed, you know, $9.9 billion or whatever it is. They're using $4 billion in this budget. And they're even putting $2 billion in a rainy day surplus, which makes no sense to me. I don't even understand why you're borrowing money to put it in a rainy day surplus, because that is money that our kids are going to have to pay back in the form of higher taxes. I mean, you know, Governor Murphy might not be governor then, but we're still going to have to pay it back, and it's still making our state more expensive. But, you know, there are always structural issues with our budget that can be addressed that Democrats don't even want to take on. And that's, you know, the issues with school funding, the issues with the state health benefits program, the issues with the state pension. You know, there are reforms that can be tackled, but they are untouchable programs with the Democrats. So they don't even want to touch those issues. But, you know, even simple things that you outlined that really, you know, people would feel no pain if those things happened this year. There's just really no appetite to do it. And frankly, voters don't hold them accountable. Governor Murphy was elected basically saying, I'll raise your taxes. And he was still elected because he, frankly, wasn't Chris Christie, and people were tired of Chris Christie. And, you know, that was the other guy running. And, you know what makes me laugh, Fernando? Governor Murphy once said, and he said a couple of times, you know, people will pay high taxes in New Jersey because we're a high service state. High service? The services we get. Have you been at the line to MVC? Are you kidding me? These are the services we're paying for?
No. And Jeanette, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because I've seen in many sort of COVID briefings or even in interviews he's given, the governor just seems very cavalier with, like, well, if you don't like it, you can just move. Well, sorry, Phil. Like, not everybody has that luxury. You know, not everybody has that luxury that you do, you know, having a nice, you know, savings and checking account. Or having a villa in Italy to go to when you want to get away for a few weeks, you know, and you leave Sheila Oliver, God help us, in charge of the state of New Jersey. So I just think it's really infuriating. And I know that I've been trying to reach the governor's office for some time. I know I've been talking to his people. I'm trying to get him on my Monday night show, which streams, because what's frustrating though is that he seems not willing to take questions. Like, he's willing to sit there for 30 minutes, Jeanette, with David Cruz. And again, let me just go on the record here. I don't have anything personally against David. I just don't think he really asks a lot of tough questions. And sure, the governor will give him 30, 40 minutes, and it's like, you know, softballs. And no offense, like, people like you and I and homeowners and taxpayers want answers. Like, why aren't we cutting some spending? Why aren't we putting a freeze on the gas tax? Wasn't the whole purpose of the gas tax, and again, you're a public affairs consultant, so you can educate me on this and our audience, but wasn't the whole purpose of the last gas tax to put in a lockbox when it comes to infrastructure repairs? Well, wait a minute. What happened to that lockbox?
Right. Well, you know, lockboxes are a funny thing in Trenton. You know, unless it's constitutionally dedicated, it doesn't really exist in a lockbox. But, you know, yes, hypothetically, yes, is the answer to your question. And, you know, the governor has the ability to do that. But, again, who's holding him accountable? The voters sure aren't. He got elected. His poll numbers still look pretty good. You know, I think voters need to wake up a little bit. And
I don't know how. Who are they polling? His cousins? His neighbors? Who are they polling? I mean, Jesus.
I'm not sure.
No, go on. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure. Well, and frankly, look, I mean, you know, we're not in a campaign cycle where, you know, Republicans are spending money against him on TV or, you know, really highlighting a campaign against him right now. So he's basically going unchecked. And I think that'll change when he's up for re-election next year in 2021. And certainly, you know, you have whoever the presumptive Republican nominee, whether it's Jack Chitterelli or someone else or a number of candidates, you know, hitting the airwaves, hitting the mail and reinforcing messages of the high taxes, you know, some of his policies on COVID-19, particularly at nursing homes, he's very vulnerable on that issue.
Yeah.
I think those poll numbers will change. But right now, you know, look, he's able to get away with a lot because no one's really holding him accountable. And that's not to say that the Senate Republicans and Doug Steinhardt, the Republican chairman, that's not to say they're not doing a great job. It's just New Jersey is a tough state to get your message out because we're sandwiched between New York and Philadelphia media markets. You know, it's tough and people are home. They're, you know, focused on their own issues. Governor Murphy is on TV every day for these COVID-19 briefings. And, you know, that's kind of the only thing that people see. And as a result, you know, he kind of gets away with these sneaky tax increases.
Listen, that's a fair observation, and we'll get to what awaits him in 2021 in a moment, but I want to take it back to COVID because you just brought it up, and obviously, Jeanette, you know, COVID has disrupted every aspect of our lives going back to 7 months now where the economy was shut down, parents were forced to be with their kids nonstop, obviously, because of schools and everything. So, you know, listen, it could drive us crazy. And one of the things that I've always found fascinating in the dynamics that you and Joshua, and by the way, shout out to Josh. I hope you're listening tonight, Josh. You know, hopefully I'm one of your favorite conservatives still, you know. But what's always interesting is that even pre-COVID, and it's 2020, Jeanette, it's an election year. And one thing I've learned about this election cycle, and I'm not trying to sound hyperbolic here, but this really is perhaps the most polarizing election of my lifetime, okay? Like, I'm over 40. Mm-hmm. I have a good recollection of presidential elections going back, like maybe let's say to the late 80s, that I remember vividly, okay? And I remember watching each campaign cycle and how, you know, intense it was. But I can tell you that this year, more than ever, obviously, it is really polarizing. And, you know, in your household where, obviously, you know, you're an operative, right? You're a journalist. You're also an operative. You're a consultant. Mm-hmm. But you lean conservative. Clearly, Josh doesn't do that. Josh leans the other way. So in the Henny household, I have to ask, because I'm sure that you're not the only couple going through this in New Jersey or America, but there are clearly two very diverse political ideologies. There are two very – obviously, you're registered members of different parties. You probably see – you don't see eye to eye on certain issues. Maybe you do, but by and large, you lean conservative. The last time I looked, Joshua tends to lean more progressive or liberal. You know, how do you make that work? Like, how do couples like you, because I'm sure you're not the only couple in America that has to endure this, especially in an election year where you might be, listen, you were pre-COVID, you probably could have been at each other's throats about the election. Now with COVID, everyone on edge, people have gotten each other's nerves. You've been home all the time next to each other. How do couples like you function in such a polarizing political climate?
Well, there's a lot of togetherness right now. I think everyone can relate.
Sure.
You know, husbands, wives, kids, we're together so much. But, we I think the good thing about it is because we're so invested in politics and policies that we always talk about it so much, you know, and we can have a productive and healthy dialogue about it and not get offended or upset at the other one for not agreeing with the other person, because this is what we do, right? We disagree with other people constantly. Like, I'm sure, Fernando, that you can have a disagreement with someone and not get mad at them or hate them or, you know, think less of them. You just have a difference of opinion.
It's hard lately with some of the woke nonsense that we're subjected to, but it's getting more difficult for sure. I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, well, and they're like, you know, I think he's much more liberal than I am conservative, I think. I'm Republican, but I'm, you know, I feel like I'm a moderate Republican. I think he's more liberal than I am Republican, but I think we're both, you know, rational, normal people. So, you know, he sees how far his party has gone to the left when I pointed out. and you know, he
can
be reasoned with. And
does that concern him? Does that worry him?
I don't want to speak for him. You can have him on the show, but I think so. I mean, and it's the same way when I see some things that happen in my party, when, you know, I think people are going too far to the right or saying or repeating messages that I don't think are going to help the president or the Republican Party. It bothers me, you know. You know, one of the things that I don't think helps Republicans is making the mask issue a partisan issue. I don't see why that should be a partisan issue. And
that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I think that's just a matter of public health. So that's something that, you know, I would agree. I would tend to agree with Joshua on that shouldn't even be partisan. But I think we can disagree and move on. We can, you know, end it there and not, you know, throw plates at each other. And it's funny because now I have two older kids. They're starting to get into the debate and they're starting to have opinions and that's kind of fun to watch too. Where they're starting to lean and you know, sometimes it'll be different on the issue.
I don't want spoilers here, but I mean, is someone outnumbered? is somebody outnumbered right now? Or are the kids kind of leaning towards mom more or dad, or are they still formulating opinions right now?
I think they're kind of independent right now. So we'll see. I mean, I'm lobbying pretty hard.
Okay. Yeah. Listen. Yeah. I'm glad you are.
We got a couple years before they can register. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
But it's fun. It's fair, fun because fair. we have a pretty big front yard, and you know, we have our lawn signs out, and in a couple of weeks we'll have diverse lawn signs on the yard.
Uh-oh.
Of different
Ooh.
Local and state candidates. So,
okay.
And we're on
okay.
a pretty main street in town, so people drive by and get very confused.
Okay. Well, you know what? I definitely want to see a picture on your Instagram there. I'll definitely repost it for sure. You know, Jeanette,
yeah,
you mentioned
definitely
it's an election year, and I mentioned it at the top of my monologue earlier that, I mean, short of some overwhelming tsunami, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the 14 electoral votes that is the Garden State, I think, will safely go blue. I'd like to see, you know, 1988 all over again, but I think that's kind of hard. I think the dynamics have changed a lot in New Jersey since 88. I just think the urban pockets of the state, like Jersey City and Patterson, Elizabeth, Trenton, Newark, you know, Camden, I mean, those are just, they seem like very big Democratic strangleholds. It just seems like those numbers there could just, I just think they'll overwhelm like parts of the Jersey Shore, parts of Central and South Jersey that maybe lean red. So I'd love to see New Jersey go red for the president, but I highly doubt it. But what's possible, and I really want to get your thoughts on this because of what you do for a living, it seems that while Joe Biden's got those 14 electoral votes, it doesn't seem like every Democrat in House races is a sure thing. I think there are some vulnerable Democrats going into November 3rd on the House seats. I don't think Cory Booker's vulnerable. I think Cory Booker's fine. You know, no disrespect to his opponent, but I think Cory Booker will win that race easy. But I don't think the House races are going to be that easy. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think we have some really exciting House races in New Jersey, honestly. Well, first, I think that one of the biggest House races in the country is in the 2nd Congressional District, Jeff Van Drew's seat, who is a Democrat who switched parties to be a Republican. I think he wins. I think he keeps that seat for Republicans. He's running against Amy Kennedy, who, you know, is married to Patrick Kennedy, who's a Democrat, was a former congressman in Rhode Island. Obviously, Kennedy family brings a big name. But I, look, first of all, I don't think the prestige of the Kennedy name is what it used to be.
I agree.
Has a very strong record. He's a great retail campaigner. He's always been very independent. You know, people know him as this great local retail politician who has a tremendous record of constituent services down there. So I think as much as they want to play it up as this huge race, Trump won it in 2016. I think that stays Republican. It's Republican now. It was Democratic last election, but I think Van Drew wins it. But I think as far as the safe Democratic seats, I think Tom Malinowski, who's a freshman Democrat in the 7th Congressional District, I think he has a run for his money against Tom Kaine Jr., senator right now, who's challenging him. Because I think Tom Malinowski is too liberal for that district. He defeated Leonard Lance, who was a congressman there, last election cycle. I think that was, you know, they talk about the big blue wave that swept in New Jersey in the midterms. I think that course corrects, and I think Tom Kaine has a really good shot of taking him out there. And then, you know, there's a couple other seats that are interesting. Rosemary Becky is running against Mikey Sherrill up in the 11th Congressional District. That should be interesting because, again, that was a Republican seat. That was Rodney Frelinghuysen's seat since the 80s as a Republican. So that could very well be in play up there. So, you know, I don't think Democrats are completely safe in New Jersey this year. But you know what also is going to be interesting and I'm a little worried about, I'm not going to lie, is this vote-by-mail election that Governor
fiasco.
Murphy...
No, call it. Call it what it is.
Yeah.
It's a fiasco. It's a sham.
Yeah.
Call it what it is.
Yeah, and you know, somebody just sent me an article today. They just found a whole boatload of ballots from the June primary in Sussex County that was missing.
I read that too. It's unbelievable.
I mean, it is unbelievable. So, you know, if we thought 2000 Bush versus Gore in Florida, that was a disaster, till we see what's going to happen in November, because this is going to be going on all over the country. New Jersey is going to have so many ballots that aren't going to be counted on election day. I mean, it was a disaster in the primary. It's going to be a disaster again. I just, you know, look, this is, you're right, it's a sham. I mean, the fact that people can stand in line at NBC for 8-10 hours at a time, but they can't go vote in person is really shameful to me. You know, I don't know what else to say about it, Fernando. So I'm
concerned
about that.
No, I'm concerned with you. And I've talked about this before on just this podcast. I talked about it over the summer. I talked about it on my Real Talk show on Monday nights. And it's interesting to me how the governor has looked at vote by mail as this sort of, well, it's the safest measure right now, and it's dependable, it's right-wing hysteria, that it's not safe, or that it's not, you know, not necessarily ethical, but that it's reliable. Again, you brought up the Sussex County example recently. Ladies and gentlemen, for my viewers just tuning right now, folks, it's 9:30 on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. Joining me now tonight is public affairs consultant and media superstar extraordinaire here in New Jersey, Jeanette Hoffman, here on Politically Direct. And listen, have we forgotten what happened in Patterson over the summer?
Okay, yeah.
Like, have people forgot about Patterson? Have people forgotten about other states? And it's interesting to me where, you know, it's fine to go camp out in front of the NBC for hours, right? Like we had to in July once the state reopened, right? Once the governor started reopening the state in different phases. And it's fine to go camp out. Luckily, listen, I renewed my license in the mail. You know, I don't want to deal with being online. I mean, you know, listen, going to the NBC on a regular normal day is a nuisance. I could imagine now in July.
Right.
But that was unacceptable. But somehow voting by mail is reliable, it's safe, and it's dependable. Who are we kidding, Jeanette? This is ridiculous. And to think that, you know, there have been some media pundits in the state that have called me out and said, oh, well, Fernando's just a typical right-wing hysteric. No, I'm not. I'm setting the examples. Listen, we had an example here in Hoboken last year that a case went to federal court. Now, again, people's reaction is, well, the guy had no chance of winning, so what's the big deal? The big deal is that we're not making elections reputable. We're not making them credible. And no offense, like,
exactly.
if that doesn't matter to people, then why bother having elections at all, for the love of God?
Okay, well, I mean, what's the point of a democracy? And, you know, if here's the thing. There are states that have all vote-by-mail elections. Like, California did it, but it took them years to transition. Years. They didn't just do it in a matter of months. So if you want certainty in your election systems, why wouldn't you do the process that you have in place? Our country is so divided right now. To suddenly switch your systems in the middle of an election, it's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, just forget about New Jersey. The entire country, we're not going to know the outcome of this election for weeks, maybe not months. It's just I'm fearful for the riots that are going to occur, the insanity that's going to happen, not knowing who our president is. And you know, frankly, I think that's what the left wants. They want chaos.
Absolutely.
They want, you know, they want disruption in the process.
Absolutely. I think you said it best. And I really want to get your thoughts on this because it's another issue I've talked about extensively on my other programs. And it just seems, though, Jeanette, again, I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush because I'm someone who, when I was in college, I mean, I'm sure I went to demonstrations like anybody else, and I believed in peaceful protests. But I think what we've been seeing, not just in – and listen, I get it that in June there was a big sort of phase where there were different parts of the state that people went and marched for Black Lives Matter and other causes. And if you remember, the governor got in trouble because on a Sunday, you know, he's telling everybody for months, you need to stay home. It's irresponsible of you if you go out. Whether you can't go to church, you can't have weddings, you can't have barbecues. I mean, it's irresponsible. And then in June, what's he doing? He's marching in Hillside with BLM activists.
Yep.
Yes, he's wearing a mask, but there was no social distancing. And then, of course, on Monday, of all people, the Star Ledger, who, let's be honest, I mean, that paper is about as good to use to wrap your expensive china in, okay? That paper hasn't been very much of good use to anybody, okay? And I don't mind saying that publicly, okay? But it seems like even the Star Ledger went after the governor and said, wait a minute, what are you doing here? So if you remember that part in late June, it sort of forced his hand to start reopening parts of the state quicker. I don't think that's what the governor wanted.
No, and I think if he hadn't lost that moral high ground, and he hadn't lost that credibility, we would have been locked down a lot longer. So maybe, I mean, you know, maybe for the businesses, it was good that he did that. I mean, but, you know, that is the problem, the hypocrisy of the left. You can't go to a restaurant, you can't go to church because of COVID-19, but you can go to a protest with thousands of people. You can't go to a funeral, but you can, you know, you can loot and riot and do all these other things. So it's very hypocritical. The governor himself has been very hypocritical on this issue. And, you know, I think what's very frustrating as I feel for the business owners who are being told, especially the restaurants, I mean, gosh, my heart goes out to all these restaurant owners who've been told, you know, we can't open because of data and data determined states. There's no data. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, it's basically based on his hunch of when he wants to open. Do you remember back in July when the restaurants were all set to open for indoor dining? And then the governor just pulled the plug because he saw some pictures of some kids at outdoor bars who weren't socially distanced. And he said, you know, I don't feel like it's safe, and I think we're not going to do indoor dining. Those restaurants lost thousands of dollars in food. They had been planning for weeks to reopen. I believe it was 4th of July weekend for indoor dining. And then he didn't let them reopen for, I think, at least 6 weeks. And for absolutely no reason. I mean, it wasn't because of the transmission rate, because the transmission rate had stayed the same. You know, and he was called out by reporters of, you know, what it, for what reason. And he pointed to some study from China. You know, there's really no rhyme or reason. So, you know, I think the governor really has a lot to answer for. You know, in the very beginning of the pandemic, I think people were comfortable with him. But, you know, all these executive orders, it's really overreach. And I think the legislature really needs to step in here, because they're a co-equal branch of government, Fernando. I mean, this is it's beginning to be too much, and our economy suffering. These business owners are losing their life savings that are wrapped up in their restaurants. Can't survive on 25% occupancy.
Absolutely. And I remember over the summer, both here on the podcast and also on my Real Talk show, I had State Senator Vin Gopal. Now, he's a Democrat right along the Jersey Shore, and he was critical of the governor, and I applauded him, because it seems like many in the Democratic Party in New Jersey don't want to take the governor to task. And I wonder why that is, where there are Democrats in the legislature that have a lot more longevity in politics than Governor Murphy, and why they've been so hesitant to call him out. You know, it seems like for the last couple of years, Steve Sweeney, and again, I know Senator Sweeney personally, and he's a nice guy to me, but, you know, whenever possible, he hasn't been hesitant to ever criticize the governor or take him to task on something or depose him. It seems like this summer during COVID, you haven't heard a peep from State Senate President Steve Sweeney, where you would think that, hey, maybe some of these measures are a little draconian. A lot of businesses in Central and South Jersey, especially down in those districts where he is, restaurants and other gyms that need to survive and some have been shut down permanently, you would think that some prominent Democrats would have opposed them. And the fact that they don't have a spine, I think, says a lot about politics in New Jersey, Janet.
Yeah, especially, and like you said, in South Jersey, the transmission rate was so low in a lot of those areas. So I'm not really sure why they didn't speak out on behalf of their constituents and the businesses in their districts. It's interesting to me. You know, it's been explained to me that, well, you know, the governor's poll numbers were so high at that point. But look, polls are a snapshot in time. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, look at Governor Christie. He had 70% poll ratings, and when he left office, they were down in the 30s. So, look, I don't put a lot of stake in polls. So, you know, if you're afraid to stand up to a politician because the poll numbers are high, that, you know, that doesn't say a lot.
I hope that this
pandemic is going to be around for a while, and we can't keep our economy shut down. We did what we had to do to flatten the curve. Hospital admissions are down. You know, infections are down, but we're seeing that, I think, those that get infected are staying out of the hospitals. We're finding better treatments. Hopefully, a vaccine is on the way with Operation Warp Speed. So things are looking up, I hope. I'm hopeful that, you know, our economy remains a priority for our legislature.
Well, speaking of the legislature, and of course it is budget season, Jeanette, and we know that obviously due to COVID, constitutionally the budget would have had to have been signed by June 30th, obviously because of what happened with the state of emergency. The governor was able to delay that until now, until late September, early October. We're seeing budget hearings all over, and we talked about it briefly before. It just seems like it's politics as usual with the budget, and I threw a number out at my listeners a few weeks back that, like, it shocked a few people when they reached out to me. Check out this number. Back in 2004, then-Governor James McGreevy proposed a budget to the legislature of $21 billion, okay? By January of this year, again, this is pre-COVID, Governor Murphy introduced a budget of $43 billion. That blew my mind.
Wow.
That in 16 years, we've seen that much fat, like, go into the budget. It seems like New Jersey has grown in government, but we've seen the state having the highest property taxes in the country. We've seen just ridiculous spending in Trenton. We've seen, as you mentioned before, we're one of the most heavily taxed states in the country. Now for businesses, it's not attractive. And it's always funny to me when I talk to my liberal colleagues in academia or in media or people on social media that just say, well, you know, the reason that New Jersey is, you know, in bad shape, and, you know, they want to blame the president. well, they want to blame Republicans. Here's a newsflash, folks. Democrats have controlled the legislature in both chambers here in New Jersey since 2001, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, we've had Republican governors, we've had Democrat governors down. You know, it's, you know, Murphy, Christie, Corzine, you know, whatever. But since 2001, Jeanette, Democrats have run the legislature, and they've had heavy majorities. If anyone is to blame for the horrible economic climate in New Jersey for almost 20 years, if not more, it's Democrats. And for some reason, people are just oblivious. I mean, that has to drive you crazy too, right?
Yeah, the spending. I mean, that's wow. I never realized that. That's almost double. It is double in 16 years.
Yeah.
And you have to, you know, if you ask the average person, what do you get out of that? They would laugh, right? Because, you know, do you get any additional services for that? No, your property taxes are higher. You're not getting more property tax relief. I mean, I think my property taxes have probably doubled in that time, if not more. So it really, you know, you're not really serving the taxpayers well. It's just bloated government, basically, is what it is. But, you know, look, they spend like drunken sailors. You said so earlier. And there's really no appetite to cut. And I'm not saying this about all legislators.
Sure.
There have been, you know, I know Senate President Sweeney and Senator Declan O'Scanlan, they, you know, kind of formed a commission to kind of reevaluate some of the historic issues in the budget and address the state health benefits program and then pension issues that we were having. I believe it's the Road to Reform. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, take a look at those issues, but there's just really no appetite with the governor now to address those issues. So, you know, and Governor Christie, when he came in, he did some historic reforms with the Senate president. So people have tried. It's just something happens when you get into the state house. It must be something in the water that just makes them want to spend money.
Maybe it's the fridge they all share. I don't know. Maybe the food gets contaminated with something and they lose their minds and they lose their ability to like conduct basic math. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Jeanette, I know
spending other people's money, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Listen, at some point, you know, you do run out of other people's money at some point. And it seems like New Jersey is heading down that road with, you know, to be like another California. It's always funny when I hear liberals in New Jersey. Oh, I want New Jersey to be California the East. Are you crazy? Have you seen the disaster that is Gavin Newsom in California? Please, that's the last thing we need in New Jersey is to be the Golden State.
I think that's where Governor Murphy is headed. So,
well, again, I mean, it's nice when you get to spend other people's money. Jeanette, obviously, aside from what you do with public affairs and consulting, you're also a media superstar. You know, you're a regular on Chasing News. And that's a great program. I know you and Matt Rooney and others have just, you know, made that show just incredible, great traffic, great content and topics. You know, I'm waiting for an invite on the show at some point. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to invite myself on the show, but I mean, if you need other prominent, you know, journalists on there, hey, you got to hit me up here.
I have sad news for you. Chasing News is canceled this summer. So it is no longer on the news. Yeah. So that show went off the air. So
oh wow, I'm sorry to hear that.
No longer.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I will plug Channel 9 has New Jersey Now on Sundays. So that's a great public affairs program. So I'm on that every Sunday at 12:00. Yeah, and then I do some work with Newsmax, which is a conservative channel, which I know you're on also frequently.
Yeah. I love their show. Yeah. It's amazing about conservative media, Jeanette, because you know, going back to last fall when I was the Liquid Lunch show on middays was on Newsmax. I know it's moved to Biz TV. I've been a regular on there every Monday during their Money Monday segments. But it's an amazing thing about conservative media where, you know, a lot of my colleagues in academia and also people that I talk to in social media, even journalists too, sort of, you know, almost hyperventilated the idea of, well, you know, the idea of conservative media when liberals have had a monopoly on traditional media. I mean, even before we were both alive, and it's amazing to me where people hyperventilate about, oh, well, Fox or you know, or OAN or Newsmax or other stations or other media platforms. And it seems like there are more and more people, I think, regular working class, everyday Americans, Jeanette, that are gravitating to these channels. Not because we're racist, not because we're bigots. No, we're not. I think we're regular people that are really just fed up with the social justice. These are the names that come up with every week. The typical social justice clowns, the woke fools. That's what's being shoved down our throat. That's what's on our news feeds. And I think it's these alternatives are healthy, Jeanette.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I know a lot of people who are tuning in because it's just refreshing to see the news covered that's not so biased. I mean, for example, you can watch CNN and see buildings on fire and have the anchor saying, well, that looks like a peaceful protest. I mean,
it's
just
absurd.
Laughable.
It's absurd.
So, I mean, I think it's refreshing to see news covered from a conservative angle. You've had cable news outlets covering it from a liberal angle for years and years and years. So I don't see anything wrong with this particular point of view. I think the hosts and the guests are fantastic. There's also a diversity of opinion on there. It's not just one point of view. There are Democrats, there are liberals, there are other opinions on there. But, you know, it's not just MSNBC. It's not just CNN. There are other voices out there. And
Thank God.
Yeah,
thank God.
I think it's about time. I really do think it's about time. We have, as you know, my husband, like we talked about, is a Democrat. So we have all of it on our TV. So you can go in one room and Fox will be on one TV, and then the next room, MSNBC will be on the next TV. And it's just amazing the difference in the coverage. Look, I embrace it. I love Newsmax. I really like Fox. I just think it's important to have different views out there and for people to be able to choose, right? I mean, you shouldn't just be subjected to one point of view.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, when we see networks openly cheerleading for the DNC, like CNN and what I call MSDNC, I don't call it MSNBC. To me, it's MSDNC. That's what I look at that channel.
Yes.
It's so absurd. And listen, I understand that for a lot of, like, for liberals and people on the left that look at Fox, I understand they cater to a conservative audience. That's fine. But when you look at the apparatuses that have been in existence, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, CNN. I mean, listen, think about it this way, Jeanette. It was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away when we first heard the voice of James Earl Jones say, CNN, the most trusted name in news. And that was 40 years ago when CNN first broke out on our cable services. Okay, and we heard James Earl Jones' voice and we said, wow, 40 years later, I'm sorry, CNN is far, and I get it that they'll always brag about, oh, well, we have great ratings. Well, of course, you're on in every airport, you're on in every hair salon, so of course, people have no choice but to watch you and are subjected to CNN on a constant basis. So I don't like to take a lot of these liberal channels seriously, and I get it that maybe people look at Newsmax and Fox and look at OAN and other apparatuses, you know, like online platforms like Ben Shapiro with The Daily Wire, and others as, well, that's too conservative. Well, the problem is, Jeanette, that, you know, what we're seeing right now is this really hard slant to the left for the Democratic Party. And I think that that's going to cost them a lot coming up on November 3rd. I think people publicly may not want to get into debates and argue with people. I think privately people are going to go vote and say, listen, the president's not the most presidential individual in the Oval Office. He certainly lacks tactfulness at times. He's not the most diplomatic. He's oftentimes bombastic. But I think a lot of people, Jeanette, are going to say, you know what? I can deal with this guy for four more years because the alternative is a guy who cognitively is deteriorating. And I'm not trying to sound mean-spirited for anyone who's older and maybe is struggling with, you know, cognitive skills. I'm not trying to sound like I'm making fun of him. I'm not. But this is, if you're ascending to the presidency, you have to be somewhat cognitively competent. And it's not the alternative. And it seems like people are going to have to look at the president and say, hey, I may not like this guy, but I respect the fact he's gotten things done pre-COVID. And once the economy picks up, I think he'll continue doing things. Do you think a lot of people in New Jersey or nationally are going to look at it that way too?
Well, I think there's something to be said for people who may have been comfortable with the Joe Biden that they knew under Barack Obama, but they're not quite sure if this Joe Biden is that same person or if he's just a Trojan horse for this Democratic Party that has gone far too left. And who's really in control of the party right now? And is just Joe Biden a figurehead? And once he gets in, it's really not his party and it's really not his presidency. And look, I mean, even the other day, he said the Harris-Biden ticket. He didn't, you know, it's the Biden-Harris ticket. He said so himself, it's the Harris-Biden ticket. So he's not in charge here. You know, he has AOC running his environmental policies.
Oh, my God,
I just
please,
don't think,
please.
Yeah, I just don't think the swing states, the people in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, look, New Jersey's the coast, you know, the East Coast, the West Coast, we're pretty liberal. But I just don't think in the swing states and the Midwest, I just don't think they're going to buy it. I really don't. And polls in 2016 were not representative of the final night on election night. I think the same thing is going on here, even though it's very close. I just don't think that if you look at what's happening in our cities, New York City, in Chicago, in, you know, Kenosha, you know, law and order has become the number one issue in the polls. It's bypassed COVID-19. The economy is number two. These are all issues that play well for the president. These are not issues that play well for the Democratic Party under Joe Biden.
No.
So
no, they don't.
You know, New Jersey is, I feel like, always a lost cause for Republicans in presidential years unless something different happens. But, you know, as far as the swing states, which to me are the most important for the Electoral College, I think President Trump has a very good chance this year.
I agree with you. I agree. And Janae, before I let you go, folks, it's 10 o'clock here on the East Coast, here on Blog Talk Radio. Joining me now is public affairs consultant extraordinaire, Jeanette Hoffman, right now on Politically Direct. Jeanette, again, I appreciate your time. I know you've been a busy day. But before I let you go, I know you brought up New Jersey earlier. But let's sort of fast forward to 2021. And right now, the governor will be running unopposed on the Democratic Party ticket. I know that there was some whispers last year where Steve Sweeney maybe was thinking about running against them. I think Sweeney saw the writing on the wall in terms of the big cities up in North Jersey, you know, Mayor Baraka in Newark, Mayor Phillip in Jersey City, the Mayor Patterson. And I think that I think Phil Murphy felt very comfortable knowing that a lot of the Democratic strongholds, you know, Essex County executive, he escapes me right now. DeVincenzo. In Essex County. Mm-hmm. I think all the prominent Democrats in the North were endorsing him. So I think Sweeney saw the writing on the wall. But on the opposing side right now, the only declared candidate is former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli. For the record, I like Jack. I've gotten to know Jack a little bit. He's been on my show a couple of times here on Insider NJ, on Politically Direct. Great guy. You know, but there's some whispers I'm hearing, Jeanette, throughout the state that he's a nice guy, but you know, we might need a sort of polarizing type of Republican, almost in the Christie mold from 2009, to maybe unseat Phil Murphy. Because if you remember in that summer of 2009 going into the fall, John Corzine was immensely unpopular. John Corzine was, let's be honest, let's just say what it is. He was incompetent. He was another Wall Street, you know, guru, supposedly, that came into politics and didn't know what he was doing. And it showed. It showed how poorly governed New Jersey was. And, you know, it was still a close victory for Governor Christie because, you know, Christie has still had to galvanize a lot of independents, which is how he won this vote in 2009. And again, not to say anything against Jack. I like him. But do you think Jack Cittarelli can be that Christie-esque personality? Or is there somebody else out there? Because we've heard names like Doug Steinhardt, who hasn't formally announced, but there's whispers about Doug. There are other names thrown out there. Is there like a Christie-esque type personality that maybe is out there for 2021? Because I think that's what, again, I'm not trying to glorify Chris Christie. I mean, fellow Cowboy fan, that's one, probably the only thing I'll applaud him on because I've had my issues with Chris Christie as a totality for 8 years. But are we going to need someone like that to try to challenge Phil Murphy, or is a nice guy approach going to be able to take him?
That's a good question. Look, I think Chris Christie is Chris Christie. I don't think there's anybody.
Sure.
I think he's his own entity. I think, look, another Goldman Sachs governor is going to be really weak, and I think that whoever runs against him, that is going to be the message that they need to drum home. And I think Jack Chitterley can be really strong on that. But look, we don't know who it's going to be. Jack is running. He's running hard. He's got a good message. He's very likable. He's very charismatic. But, you know, a gubernatorial candidate needs money, and they need a good message, and they need momentum. So there's a couple other names I'm hearing out there also. I really like Jack. I'm also hearing Doug Feinhardt. I'm also hearing John Bramnick. Sheriff of Monmouth County, Sean Golden's terrific. So, look, or it could be somebody we don't even know about right now, Fernando. It could be somebody, you know, who's not in politics, somebody, you know, a business person or somebody outside. So we'll see. But it's going to be a tough race because New Jersey, look, they have a lot more Democrats in the state register than we have Republicans. So, and in the urban areas than we are. So it's going to be a fight. So whoever the candidate is has to do a great job at getting out the vote, getting out the message, and really, you know, going hard against Governor Murphy for raising taxes and, you know, not doing a great job managing our state. And we don't need another 4 years of this. So it's going to be exciting. We'll see. We still have a couple months before 2021, and then
sure,
the primary will start.
Course.
In the spring, start shaping up. So, look, I like Jack. I don't know if he's going to be the nominee. I'm not really sure yet, but I don't know. You'll have to have me on again, and we can talk about it.
Oh no, listen, I'll definitely have you on later this fall. But speaking of 2021, Jenna, any thoughts of jumping into a race, an assembly race, maybe in your district, and maybe getting into the political arena, or are you happy with what you're doing presently?
I am happy where I am right now. I'll just say that for now. But yeah, no, I'm pretty good. I like to sit on the sidelines and cheer for others.
Okay. Listen, that's a good answer.
How about you? How about you?
Oh, well, Jeanette, listen, I think I've worked really hard, I think, the last few years to try to develop a good, reputable name in media in New Jersey. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to be under the Insider NJ umbrella, which has been very beneficial to my brand. Certainly the other two studio shows that I do, I think, are continue to be reputable. I feel like to be much more influential in New Jersey in my media capacity. Now, I would never rule anything out. I haven't been approached. I mean, I ran for state assembly in 2011 as a favor. Someone asked me, you know, county chair and the state chair asked me at the time. And I said, okay, you know what? I've never done it. You know, last time I ran for any sort of election was like in college, you know, for student government. And I'm like, you know, let me give it a try here. And it was a nice experience, but I feel that what I do with media right now, I think, is really fulfilling. I'm not so much cheerleading from the sidelines in my capacity because I'm really just putting my name out there and, you know, calling people out and holding people accountable. And I think that we need to do that. I think, we should be able to do that without repercussions, without backlash. And luckily right now I've been able to do that, but never say never. But right now, like I said, I'm very happy with what I do with media and we'll see where it goes from there. And, I'll definitely want to have you back on soon, not just here on the podcast, but also on my studio show as well on Real Talk. And listen, before I let you go, I've been the one asking questions. So now I'll give you the floor, young lady. You know, if you've got a question for me, you want to pick my brain, shoot, the floor is yours.
Well, so who would your ideal candidate be in 2021 for governor?
Oof, I might piss off some people here when I say this. I'm going to tell you, I just think, and this is because of talking to him off the air, and I've had him on not just this podcast multiple times, I've had him on my studio show as well. I just really think, Jeanette, that State Senator Michael Testa would be a really good candidate. Now, I know he's new in the sense of just, you know, getting into the legislature, but he's been a very vocal voice for not just his district, but I think for like regular New Jerseyans that are tired of the tax and spend philosophy that permeates in Trenton. Again, I've asked him on the air. He seems very content with what he's doing as a state senator. Again, and listen, I'm sure people are going to tune in tonight and say, oh, he doesn't like Jack. No, no, let me be clear. I like Jack Ciarelli. I like him a lot. I'm very much in the same boat as you. But if you had to ask me, Fernando, put your chips in the middle of the table, who would you like to see? I think right now Michael Testa has as good a chance as anybody, Jeanette.
Yeah, he's great. He's a really he's a rising star in the party. I love what he's doing in the Senate. I mean, he's one of the most vocal for taking on Governor Murphy. Look, he led that lawsuit against the borrowing. Of course, it was unsuccessful, but I think it's important. It's important for Republicans to take the governor to task, especially when the legislature is controlled by Democrats. So I think he's doing a great job. Would love to see more of him.
Listen, so would I. I'm sure that answer pissed off a lot of people right now. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to do that. But, you know, again, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see next year who enters the primary process. But, Jeanette, listen, thank you so much for being on here tonight. I feel like I could have you on for 3 or 4 hours and still not get through everything. But you're busy. You're a mom. You are a superstar in every sense of the word. So I want to thank you for your time tonight. I hope you enjoyed it here on Politically Direct. And I look forward to having you back on soon. I'll be in touch with you for my studio show as well.
Yeah, definitely. This is a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me on. And enjoy the rest of your night. And I hope to talk soon.
Yes. And listen, give my best to Josh. And let's go Cowboys.
Yes, will do. Talk
soon. All
right.
Have a good one. Take care. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a good one. All right, folks, 10:05 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. Great episode tonight with public affairs consultant Jeanette Hoffman, and certainly one that I think you'll – one for the books that I think you'll definitely be checking out again on the replay. And you can always do that by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. Check it out, folks. You can do it from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And, you know, I think you'll enjoy not only tonight's episode, but previous episodes, which have included NJGOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt, certainly tap into columnist Al Sullivan, as well as insider NJ columnist Fred Snowflack, and many, many others that have been on Politically Direct in recent months. So you can definitely check out replays, folks, of the podcast at www.insidernj.com/podcast. And if you have a topic or a suggestion, folks, for the coming weeks, and you want to talk about here on the show or want to alert me to a guest, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly at Professor Fernando Uribe. I know that a lot of you enjoy my memes, my political talking points, my sports, pro wrestling, everything. I know you enjoy it when you look at my stories on Instagram, so definitely check it out. And also hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. 1,000 likes and counting. My God, thank you so much to all the fans for making this possible, because without you, this show would not be as successful as it is every week here on Blog Talk Radio via Insider NJ. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, you can check out Insider NJ by going to their website, www.insidernj.com. The best coverage and the best journalism anywhere in the state of New Jersey. No one does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. It starts with our great editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and of course, it works its way down the line to my awesome teammates, fellow columnists, Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, even Alan Steinberg, who drives me crazy sometimes with some of his delusions. But, you know, hey, great people, and I definitely want to give them all their props, because they're just great writers. You definitely want to check out their columns. And, folks, once you click on InsiderNJ.com, you'll see the subscribe button at the very top. Click on it, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. And when you're checking your email in the morning, whatever it is you're doing, have a coffee, walking the dog, whatever it is, you know, maybe you're on the treadmill, maybe you're trying to shed that COVID weight. Hey, whatever it is you're doing, I'm sure you're on your phone checking your inbox. Guess what? You'll see it right there, and you'll get the best scoops and the best journalism courtesy of the Morning Intelligence Briefing, brought to you by Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, and of course, follow them on Twitter. And don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Well, that's our show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Again, a special thank you once again to public affairs consultant Jeanette Hoffman and her husband Joshua Henney as well. Great power couple in New Jersey, to say the very least, getting things done here politically. So I want to thank her for her time. Great episode tonight. And folks, remember, it's real. It's here. Politically Direct. Good night, Shrewsbury, New Jersey. great town here in the Garden State. Again, shout out to all of my listeners tonight there listening in Shrewsbury, New Jersey. Folks, please party responsibly this weekend. If you're down the shore or anywhere else, please be careful. I'll see you next week, folks, here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Bring it.